This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
COVID disbelief. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this hour, in addition to frontline workers having to treat patients in the midst of a pandemic, they're also having to manage those who don't think COVID is real. On the money front, the topics that financial commentators will peddle in 2021, just like they do every year. Also, a growing trend among online chess players, cheating, but there's a small group dedicated to ratting them out. And the growing stream of college football players ending their careers early.
2 years ago, we started to see some of the top tier players that were likely going to go in the first round of the NFL draft sometimes opt out of their bowl game if they weren't playing for a national title, just to prevent injury and to start getting ready for the combine. But this year, with coronavirus, a lot of the top prospects actually opted out.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on college football players trying to avoid COVID while preparing for the NFL draft. Healthcare workers are facing an additional challenge in keeping up with the recent surge in coronavirus cases. A number of people in their communities say the virus isn't as bad as public health and news reports indicate, and some say it isn't real. Outside the hospital, at the grocery store checkout maybe, or through family and friends, doctors and nurses say they hear people calling the virus a hoax and saying medical professionals are exaggerating the severity. It's a story by Sarah Krause, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Sarah, what's going on?
Occasionally, doctors say they will have patients who don't believe that COVID is real and don't believe that they have it. Still others describe patients who just feel that it's no more serious than the flu or a common cold.
Jeez. So you spoke with, I forget where the one nurse was, but she was actually, I think, wheeling a patient out of the hospital who had been in ICU for COVID. And
that's right.
He sort of had that awakening moment.
Yeah. So he equated the coronavirus to the flu and said that the media was exaggerating the threat. And her response to that was, you know, you're the first COVID-19 patient that I've treated all day who's able to converse with me. And she said she's treating the sickest patients she's seen in 10 years as a nurse. And so she said after that, he appeared to grasp the seriousness of it and thank her. But these doctors and nurses that I talk to say at times it feels like you're in a parallel universe where you spend your days in really intense work situations caring for very sick people, and then to go out into the community and be met with skepticism is sort of further draining on top of the existing emotional and physical burden of the job.
Wow. We're speaking with Sarah Krause, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called COVID-19 Disbelief Saddles Healthcare Workers with Another Challenge. So do these nurses, for example, find themselves in debates, like in their own homes or various gatherings?
Yeah. And so what some people described was, you know, if they see family members or friends of family, sort of posting on social media or engaging in group chats, either spreading misinformation or expressing skepticism, they'll message them privately. Others described getting off social media altogether to not engage. And still others, there were two doctors that I spoke to in Idaho who spoke at a public health meeting after two other people who advocated for unproven treatments and questioned the effectiveness of masks as a mitigation tool. So those doctors were sort of testifying about the severity of the virus as well as the efficacy of using masks, which public health officials agree is a way to mitigate the spread.
Yeah. So what's with the general disbelief here?
In some places, this is rooted. These doctors that I talk to say they feel it's rooted in economic frustration. So people who lost their jobs or felt economic pain from shutdowns that hit before the virus was in their communities feel frustrated. They felt like, what was the point of that? I've lost so much for this thing that I don't feel. And so they feel like a decent amount of this is rooted in that. It's unclear with others. It's sort of, there have been some conflicting mandates as researchers and scientists and doctors have learned more about the virus, about what it is, how it spreads, and what works. And in some cases, some of those measures have been politicized. And so, I think some of this frustration on top of pandemic fatigue from the continued closures of a normal way of life is sort of building up in certain communities.
All right. So if they're dealing with this in regards to COVID itself, are they going to also be dealing with vaccine disbelief?
Yeah. So when they describe the consequence of this, the points that were raised were sort of many. One was, if you don't believe that the virus is real or serious, you are therefore probably not taking measures to mitigate the spread, like wearing a mask or social distancing or not attending gatherings, large gatherings, and that risks further spread. If there is a wave that then causes, healthcare facilities may become overwhelmed, and in rural or remote areas where there's maybe one main trauma hub, and that is filled with COVID patients, it can't accept transfers from other smaller locations, which means people injured in car crashes or other accidents might end up being treated in facilities with less experience in that kind of treatment. Then the sort of ultimate knock-on then is, will people be further skeptical of the vaccine, which could sort of slow our path out of this pandemic? So, if you don't believe that the virus is real or serious, are you going to be inclined to get vaccinated?
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Krause, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, more men seeking relationship help. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive VP and Chief Business Development Officer at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, if I wanted to start a new business, what is it that makes Michigan so attractive?
Yeah, if you want to start a business in Michigan, we have unbelievable assets here in Michigan for our entrepreneurial community as well, in terms of opportunities for growth through access to capital, services, great universities, and a talented workforce that can grow through those startup businesses here in Michigan. We've seen examples of companies grow from an idea to over $1 billion valuation, companies like Duo Security and others that have grown here through the strong ecosystem of support that we have for high-tech startups here in the state.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. That's thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. New trend on the relationship front. A growing number of men are working with professionals on their mental and emotional health as they struggle with relationship challenges and divorce. One of the people they turn to is Terry Vanover, divorce and relationship strategist, also founder of the website choosingtorise.com. Terry, what are you hearing?
I would say the increase has definitely, we've definitely seen an uptick since the pandemic hit, for sure. But before so, I was really predominantly really only working with women, and, people had said, men need support too, So I opened up my platform. We were meeting in person at the time, and okay, so we'll open it up to men and we'll meet separately. Well, little did I know that would open the floodgate, So the lesson there for me is if you provide a safe platform for men, they will share, they will come, they want the support. There's not enough places for men to get support for their emotional needs and to talk and to have other people listen. And with the pandemic, it's just increased as the divorce rates have skyrocketed since the pandemic. I'm definitely seeing more men asking for support, reaching out.
Wow. Why is that? Why have divorce rates skyrocketed? Start with that.
That is a great question, and I think that will be something we'll continue to research as this continues. But what I think has happened, and what most, professionals think has happened, is that the relationship probably didn't have a great foundation. There were cracks in the relationship to begin with. But now, with no distractions, you can't go to work, your kids can't even go to school, right? You're all stuck together. And so the quarantine and being together in the pandemic has really caused people to come face to face with their relationship issues. And for some people, they're just realizing, you know, they can't overcome it, or it's just, they can't save it. Whereas before the pandemic, I think people really could use work to escape, you know, to go out with their friends, to get away. But now there's no escape. So if you have a relationship that isn't working, this pandemic is just really going to shine a light on those cracks, and the cracks are going to get bigger. Some people are either going to come closer together, but I think for most people, it's pulling them apart.
Well, we're speaking with Terry Vanover, divorce and relationship strategist, also founder of ChoosingToRise.com. We're talking about why more men are seeking help with their relationships these days. I saw something in notes that said being a nice guy might be contributing to divorce. What is that about?
Yes, I would say that. Oh, I would say all my clients are like recovered nice guys. And what do I mean by that? So I want to make a distinction, because I kind of make the distinction, and Dr. Glover, he's a famous therapist and coach, and he talks about, you know, how to stop being a nice guy. He kind of coined that phrase originally. And I kind of make the distinction between a nice guy and a good guy. A good guy has a great heart and is loving and caring, but also has healthy boundaries. What I make the distinction with the nice guy is that they are loving and kind, have a great heart, but they don't have good, healthy boundaries, particularly with women. And that's what I think that's the myth that many men buy into. They think that if they continue to please their partner, and if they do everything that they can to make her happy, that it's going to make him happy. But ultimately, most men end up sacrificing themselves, sacrificing friendships, sacrificing dreams, sacrificing who they really are and their identity. And then they become resentful and not really a whole person.
Thanks, Terry. Terry Vanover, divorce and relationship strategist. Again, her website, choosingtorise.com. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers powered by Intel Core processors for your small business. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In the last 2 weeks, more than a dozen athletes from college football's top five conferences, the Atlantic Coast, Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12, and Southeastern conferences, have opted out. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka about players ending their collegiate careers early to avoid COVID and prepare for the NFL.
The hottest trend this college football season, opting out. Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal is here with more. Lane, this trend actually started a few years ago, but it's accelerated this year, no?
Definitely. And a few years ago, we started to see some of the top-tier players that were likely going to go in the first round of the NFL draft sometimes opt out of their bowl game if they weren't playing for a national title, just to prevent injury and to start getting ready for the combine. But this year, with coronavirus, a lot of the top prospects actually opted out over the summer and said, you know, I'm not even going to try to play football because it's not worth playing in a pandemic or getting injured. I'm just going to focus on me and what I need to do to get ready to play in the professional leagues. And there's a big wave over the summer, but recently, now that, you know, the races for the conference championships are starting to come into clearer focus, and teams are realizing, you know, this isn't really the season that I thought it was going to be, a lot of players are opting out again. So there's kind of been this second wave, you know, to borrow some parlance from our favorite pandemic, of opt-outs that's happened in college football in the last month or so.
Lane, your story profiles a number of individuals who have kind of varying reasons for quitting right now. What were some of those?
Yeah, so Rashad Bateman, who is a wide receiver from Minnesota, he actually opted out over the summer in August because he got COVID in June, and he has asthma, so one of the preconditions, and he had a really rough go of it for about a week, and he said he was kind of scared and didn't really like the way that felt, and, you know, he says he's back fine now, but he still sort of feels it when he breathes. So when it got to be late November and there was another big outbreak on the Gophers team, he decided that, you know, maybe it's not worth playing. And turns out he still hasn't really missed a game yet because the Gophers have had two games postponed and ultimately canceled because of the outbreak on their own team. So it's not like he's, you know, ditched his team necessarily because they're not playing either. But then some of the other players, they kind of got too far down the path of signing with agents and signing contracts by the time that their league decided, yes, we're actually going to play. In the case of the Big Ten, which kind of had this back and forth walk up to the season. And other players said, you know, I have a parent that's died previously and I don't want to risk exposing them to coronavirus. I'm not going to play this year. So the reasons were kind of all over the board. And another player I talked to, Greg Rizzo from Miami, said that his mom is a nurse that works on the front lines. And every time she came home from work, it was all she could talk about. And he's like, you know what? I think it makes more sense for me to not play football this year, not risk it, and be able to financially support my mom. So that way we're not so dependent on her job at the hospital because, you know, that's taxing. So a lot of these reasons were personal and not necessarily all because of coronavirus, but coronavirus played a role in most of them.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Lane, are these guys leaving teams that are definitely out of the bowl picture, which is dwindling every day, and or the playoff?
So yes and no. Most of the opt-outs that have happened in the last few weeks are on teams like LSU, where, you know, they were national champions last year, but they've been historically bad by comparison this year, where, you know, they're not even in the conversation to play for the SEC championship. Or Texas had a couple guys opt out when they played Iowa State and lost, and ultimately lost the chance to be still in the running for the Big 12 title. You know, some of the players are opting out on teams that, you know, maybe had they not opted out, it would have been a little bit of a different story. You know, Oregon had five of its top players opt out before the season. And, you know, obviously they did not start playing until November, and the Pac-12 probably had a long shot case of making the playoff because they have, you know, so few games to begin with. But they, you know, that kind of changes a team's fate if you have all of your best players not playing. So there haven't been as many on teams like Alabama and Ohio State. There was a few players that opted out and opted back in. Clemson has not had that many, and Notre Dame has not had that many, which are currently the top four teams. But that's not to say they've had zero.
Are these guys mostly or all pro prospects?
So that's what's interesting. A huge contingent of them are, but a lot of them are people that just said, you know what? I think I'm done. I think this is it for me. Like, for instance, Vanderbilt's kicker, their first string kicker that actually, you know, through a series of domino falling, opened the door for Sarah Fuller to kick for them against Mizzou. He opted out at the beginning of the season, and he's probably not going to play pro football. But a lot of the guys that are opting out now and that opted out before the season do have some realistic hope of playing in the NFL. And granted, a lot of these guys that are quarterbacks that also could play in the NFL have decided to keep playing this year. And, you know, it's unclear if that's because the best quarterbacks happen to play for teams that are probably in the conversation to play in the semifinal, like Clemson and Ohio State and Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, or it's just quarterbacks that, you know, feel like they need to acquire more game tape to really, you know, get their team in the conversation and also to increase their draft stock.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal sports reporter Lane Higgins. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Happy you could spend part of your weekend with us. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, how to RSVP no to the office holiday party. Plus, next year, financially foretold. Also, catching chess cheaters. And should 2020 Christmas cards mention COVID? We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Well, it's the holidays, and as sure as families are picking out trees and stringing up lights and ordering gifts, many companies are planning the annual office holiday party. But as the coronavirus flares across the country, some employees may greet an invitation to an in-person office gathering with a big question, and that's, should I go? Charisse Jones at USA Today has a look at how to say no over COVID concerns. Charisse, help us out.
First of all, you've got to remember that you can always say no, right? I mean, if something comes up, you've got another engagement, which is very common during the holiday season. Somebody gets sick. So you always have that right. But the better way to go might be to explain to your manager how you're feeling. You know, ask them if there's going to be some safeguards in place at the party. Maybe tell them if you have an underlying health condition or somebody in your household does, so that they really understand, you know, what's going on. And ultimately, even if you don't have a health challenge, if you're worried about how safe it's going to be, you have a right under OSHA not to go. But, you know, having that conversation can kind of make it a little bit less awkward. And I think a lot of employers will certainly understand if you don't feel comfortable coming out in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. It can be weird, though. I think everybody understands they have the right to say no, but sometimes you feel the pressure from a manager or your colleagues, or you think, man, you know, could this jeopardize a potential future promotion or a way to climb the ladder, right? I mean, sometimes you just feel obligated.
Well, it's true because, you know, it's really one of the few times that you actually get to meet folks in other departments, to have some FaceTime with your manager in an informal way where you're not just getting an order to do something or talking about a work task. Mm. And so it really is valuable FaceTime, and it's FaceTime that's not through a computer screen, right? I mean, everybody's zoomed out. It's a chance to really kind of shake hands and talk about other things. And so, you know, you never know behind the scenes what's happening in someone's head, right? I mean, if you do say no, you have the right to do it. Maybe that will hinder you in some way, or the person who shows up may have a bit of an advantage. But I do think because it's such an unusual year that there's a lot of, you know, flexibility that's being given, and people will understand if you say, you know, I'd love to be there, but I just don't feel that I can do it this time.
We're speaking with Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today, and she's talking about a no RSVP to your company office party if you're having one. How about this group you talked about, the Entrepreneurs Organization in San Antonio? They're getting together in person, and a bunch of them, it seems.
Yeah, they've got about 20 of their 60 members that are going to come together. And they just said, you know, everybody is just so tired of the computer. People really need that contact. So they wanted to go ahead and do something in person. But they are, like most of the companies that are doing an in-person gathering, putting protocols in place. So it's going to be outside. They're going to have you, it's mandatory to wear a mask. And they're going to do this interesting thing where you have a color-coded sticker on your name badge. And so if your sticker is red, it means that you really want people to stay 6 feet away from you, that you're not playing around, you know. And then I guess the other colors mean that you can get a little closer. So, you know, they're putting in place measures to make people feel a little bit more comfortable, but they really felt people should get together in person because folks are so tired of being isolated and distanced from each other, and it's the holiday.
Yeah, the color coding is a little weird. I mean, walking into a party going, hey, did you see Charisse? No, not allowed. She's got the bubble around her. You can't say hello to Charisse. You can text her from 40 feet away, but you can't say hello.
Right, I know. It's a little weird, but it's a weird year, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not out of character.
Thanks, Charisse. Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. The markets aren't predictable, but the talking heads sure are. There's no need to waste hundreds of hours in 2021 reading the business section and watching financial news commentators on TV, because we already know what the pundits will be saying next year, and probably the year after that, and the year after that. So says Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. He's put together a handful of storylines for next year that you'll hear from these commentators. Jonathan, take us through a couple.
So Gordon, I've been writing about this stuff for 35 years. And every year you see the same crop of stories come up. And when you read them, what you really need to do is read between the lines, because there's a reason people are pushing these stories. And for instance, one of the most common stories we've seen this year, we're going to see in 2021, and we will see in 2022. This is a prediction you can take to the bank. We will get people forecasting that the stock market is going to crash. Now, anybody who knows anything about the market knows that you cannot predict its short-term direction. So why do we have these talking heads forecasting the market's going to crash? Because they know if they make that prediction, They're going to get themselves on TV, and they're going to get themselves 15 minutes of fame. And in fact, the more extreme the prediction, the more likely they are to find themselves on TV. So when you see those guys on TV making those dire forecasts, don't think, wow, they might be true. Think, why are they spouting this nonsense that they know isn't necessarily true?
Mm. They're looking for clients, ultimately, I would imagine, in addition to that fame or publicity.
Absolutely. And you know, as I said, the more extreme the prediction, the more likely they are to get on TV. The question is, why do we listen to these folks even though we know that nobody can forecast the market's direction? And I think there are a couple of things going on here. One, people who are pessimistic strike us as being somehow more sophisticated, whereas people who are optimists who say, hey, the stock market generally goes up, you should be in stocks, that strikes us as being naive. But the other thing that goes on here is we are hardwired to fear losses. So even though we know that nobody can forecast the market's direction, when we've got somebody on TV saying, stocks are going to lose 50% of their value, you know, financial apocalypse is around the corner, we sit up and take notice, even though we know that their forecasting ability is zero.
What is it about target date funds that you expect to hear from them over and over again?
So again, target date funds are a classic example of where Wall Street self-interest comes in. So you'll often hear financial advisors bashing target date funds, and they'll complain that, you know, it's not a customized portfolio, it might be too tax inefficient, and so on and so on. But of course, the reason they're saying this is because they want to get you as a client, so you come to them and they can build you a customized portfolio of mutual funds for which they will just happily charge you 1% of assets per year. For a lot of people, going and buying a target date fund, particularly one of those target date funds that is built using index funds, you can get them from Schwab, you can get them from Fidelity, you can get them from Vanguard, that's going to give them a great low-cost portfolio that's automatically rebalanced on their behalf. And if they're holding it in a retirement account, it doesn't matter if it's tax inefficient because you're not going to have to pay taxes on the gains each year anyway. So when you hear the people saying target date funds are terrible, wonder why those financial advisors are saying it, and it's because they have a conflict of interest.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece about the same old stories you'll hear over and over again told by financial commentators. One of them, too, number six on your list. Everyday investors are buying, they say, so you shouldn't. Explain that.
Wall Street loves to bash everyday investors. It's, you know, their favorite pinata. And this year, we saw them bashing the Robinhood traders. And the Robinhood traders, you know, who are buying these technology stocks or these leveraged ETFs were supposedly a sign of a market top. Those stories were rampant over the summer. Guess what? It wasn't a market top. The stock market kept going up. And the reason you know these stories are nonsense is because small investor trading is really not that significant in the overall market.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. Steve Jobs used to talk about how much time and energy we waste picking out clothes every day. That's especially true in the work from home era that we're in now. But just because a suit's not required doesn't mean you want to get so casual you look like you just rolled out of bed. Cuts Clothing has the perfect answer. You don't need to choose your outfit. Just throw on a Cuts shirt or polo, some pants, and you look professional and feel amazingly comfortable. The quality you need for business, the comfort you want for anything else, home or away. And for winter, their new hoodies made with custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric are essential. They spent 4 years getting them just right. I love that they're soft, comfortable, warm, and made for the long haul. Try one on. You'll be a Cuts Clothing customer for life. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Seems like everyone is wearing Cuts these days. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Well, in the year when everyone went online to play chess and even went online to watch a TV show about chess, players developed a nasty new habit. They started cheating at chess online. Here with an in-depth analysis is Joshua Robinson, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Joshua, what's this about?
Well, it's about how, I mean, this year has seen an incredible surge in the number of people playing chess online, not just because of the pandemic, but also because of but also because of the Netflix show, The Queen's Gambit. And so it's of course, what we saw and what was really extraordinary is that the new players came out, but also the cheaters came out. And actually, the number of cheaters online, it was growing at a faster rate than the number of new players. And so from there, it's empowered and really made necessary a new group of people, and they are the chess detectives. It's a small group of nerds out there in the world who are experts at looking at the readouts from chess games, comparing that to how computer moves would have done, and then deciding whether or not someone was just a little too accurate.
Holy cow! All right, so the cheaters emerged because money is at stake, or just because of bragging rights, or for the heck of it, or why?
For the most part, it's for the heck of it. But you know, the stakes are quite high in online chess today. And the reason that the stakes can be so high is because the detectives have gotten so good at catching cheaters.
No kidding. So these chess detectives, you said there's not many of them, right? Sounds like they're overwhelmed with work, though.
Yeah, you know, at a website like chess.com, the team is roughly 16 people, full-time monitoring the games that are on that website, and you know, they're talking about millions of games a day. So it's a real challenge to kind of keep up with it. And of course, you catch the most flagrant cases quite easily now. You run an algorithm, and it's not even a person who has to run it, or the computer just flags it. What's really tough to catch is the smart cheaters, and that's people who are using it for maybe a couple of moves in the middle game that are improving a position that's maybe just marginally better and inching towards more victories that way.
Holy cow. We're speaking with Joshua Robinson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called The Real Queen's Gambit, Catching Chess Cheaters. He said there's been an explosion of cheaters, of chess players online. So in some cases, for I guess some of these tournaments, you said security cameras are placed in homes of players?
That's right. For players who are playing for real stakes, and this is, you know, usually the pros, what they do is set up two cameras. One is a kind of webcam, you know, that shows the player's face and often their hands. But another is behind them, showing to make sure that they don't have a phone with a chess engine loaded or another laptop going. And they also open a Zoom window so that they can share their screens with with the proctors. And the stakes are pretty high here, because if you do get caught, you're persona non grata in the chess world. Oh. There was a grandmaster who got pinched in September, and I mean, that was really a kind of landmark case for the chess community.
Thanks, Josh. Joshua Robinson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers powered by Intel Core processors for your small business. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
We'll finish with this. Holiday cards tend to involve choosing a family photo, right? You might include a note mentioning significant life changes, such as a baby, a wedding, a new address, usually a slick picture. Well, things look a little different this year, of course, and people are struggling with how exactly to approach this once benign tradition. Do we embrace the coronavirus theme, masks and all? Perhaps it's better to pretend nothing has happened. The Wall Street Journal says Amanda Rawson Hill,
A children's book author usually includes pictures from vacations where everyone looks good, and then the back of the card will feature an outtake that she says is closer to reality. This year, the card she designed says, Hill Family 2020 Adventures. It shows photos of her husband and four children in front of the Eiffel Tower wearing berets, at Walt Disney World, on a beach in Hawaii, and on the moon. Of course, it was digital trickery. She says she's really bad at Photoshop and decided to lean into it. The back of the card had an undoctored photo of family members doing what they actually did most in 2020, sitting on their couch at their home in Atwater, California. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.